Somewhere across the bifrost, Song and Pat talk Marvel Crisis Protocol. Here is their weekly chat. Somewhere across the bifrost, don't disregard. There's tips here for you, be you casual or try hard.
Welcome back to the latest episode of Across the Bifrost. My name's Sung Soo, and before we go any further, Pat, I want to take a moment and thank Jacob from Xavier Protocols for that incredible introduction. Jacob was kind enough to send that over. You can find Jacob's work at his website or on the Danger Room podcast, which you can find across the Bifrost. I had no idea Jacob could sing. Did you know that, Pat?
No, and frankly, I'm amazed. What an introduction.
I'm hoping the next time you guys play in person, he serenades you. And if he does, you'll have to let me know how that goes. But today, we got a pretty busy show scheduled. We're going to Sleeve It or Heave It. We're going to talk about a pretty cool card. We're going to talk about Miss Marvel, who's been out for a while and we haven't done a full episode on. And then we're going to talk about some, and no one can see, I'm air quoting, rebalancing of a few ferocious women, namely Valkyrie, Enchantress, and Medusa. But Pat, let's dive right into it. Sleeve It or Heave It. This was a card you recommended, Pat. Which is it?
It's Marked for Death. So
Hold on, Pat. Oh. I didn't ask you how you were doing. Pat, how are you?
Yeah, I'm doing good, thank you. Doing good. Can't complain. Feeling pretty fresh at this early time in the morning.
You're not marked for death?
Certainly not. I got stealth. I'm a pretty long mover. My defenses have never been great, but if someone is going to give me a reroll, I'll take it.
You think you'd be a long mover? If they made Pat Dunford in the game, you'd be a long mover?
No, let's be honest. I think if they made any normal person in the game, their stats would be pretty bad. I'm certainly not as athletic as poor Crossbones, and he's short.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. But anyway, Marked for Death, right?
Yeah, so Marked for Death is an unaffiliated card. It's active, so you have to play it during your activation. And two characters within range 5 of their target each spend 1 power, and for the round, the enemy character they've selected loses stealth, their speed becomes short, and they can't modify or reroll their defense dice.
So one of those interesting cards, I'm normally not a fan of cards that require two characters, but two characters within range 5 is pretty generous, and it's got a pretty cheap cost associated with it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So like, it's kind of like disarm, the one for two characters is really low cost, especially when you consider that you already have your power-up power, right? So if you really need to play this as a priority, you're basically always going to be able to. And the range 5, just like you said, it means that you have quite a lot of selection on who is spending that power. So as team tactics cards go, okay, it's not free, but it's getting pretty close, right? It's on the low end of the spectrum.
It's definitely on the low end of the spectrum as far as cost goes. I think it's benefits are pretty interesting, and I want to hear how you rank these. We have a couple different effects, right? Loses and cannot gain stealth. Speed becomes short, and it can't modify or reroll its defense dice. So a couple pretty interesting things. Losing stealth can be monstrous, but the other two aren't anything to sneeze at either.
No, and these are all effects that don't matter for every character, right? But they are very, very good against some characters. So a couple of examples, right? Characters like Mysterio and Cassandra Nova, so much of their kit is built around having stealth because of their interaction with tricks and traps. And like being able to remove that, I'm now just second-guessing myself. I want to make sure both of them actually have stealth and not something else that can't be ignored. I think maybe Cassandra does. But Mysterio definitely has stealth. Yeah, Cassandra's can't be ignored because hers is telepathic cloak. So that's something that's worth mentioning, right? Her and Storm have stealth by another name, so it can't be removed. But being able to remove stealth in the right situation is really big, and especially big for Mysterio and countering his play. And similarly, reducing someone's speed situationally is big. Stopping rerolls of modified dice situationally is big. Bear in mind, modified dice also includes cover. So you have at least that option available to you.
Is there a character out there that is a non-short mover, has stealth, and an innate way to reroll and modify its defense dice?
Miles Morales.
Oh, good call. I was trying to think. I thought of Gwen. I'm like, no, Gwen doesn't. But okay. Miles.
Yeah, there's lots of characters that also hit 2 out of 3, like you said. So like Amazing Spider-Man or Spider-Man get curved from long to short and lose their rerolls. So this is good against Web Warriors in general. There's enough stealth characters now that might be spelled. It's like Black Cat is a long mover with stealth, you know? So there's a lot of Web Warriors that don't like this card, and there's some other characters that don't enjoy it either. I like this as a damage increasing option if you're playing against characters that are really good at manipulating their dice. So Web Warriors, once again, is a great example with their defensive rerolls and leadership. Also Wakanda with their frequent rerolls from their leadership plus models like Shuri. And you might find specific problem pieces that your opponent has. You just want to deal with them, and you don't want them to be constantly changing their dice effects.
Yeah, so I like Mark for Death. You know, it's one that, honestly, I hadn't considered in a while. When you said you wanted to cover it, I was vaguely aware of what the card did, but I definitely had to look it up to remember everything. It's one of those cards where I think it, obviously, you know, I say this every time we do it, but with 10 cards, it's definitely a lot easier to make the roster. And I like Mark for Death. I think it is an underutilized card now that you've brought it out. I'm for sleeving it. What about you, Pat?
Yeah, definitely. I think this is a really good counterpick for the right situations. And with 10 slots, I definitely think you want to be spending some of your slots on counterpicks. You don't just want 10 generically useful cards, because you're still only picking 5, right? And you're going to pick the 5 that you prefer all the time. You want cards that sometimes are amazing and sometimes you don't need, so that when they're amazing, they bump out one of your 5 preferred choices. And I think this is exactly that. And with the prevalence of Web Warriors right now, right, they're very popular in the TTS League. They're doing really well. They have a really high win rate. I personally will be trying out this card as an option to battle them.
Hmm. And I like it. So Mark for Death, we're sleeving it. Patrons, you can let us know on Discord what you think of Mark for Death, what rosters you think you're going to fit into. Is it good against teams that we hadn't considered? It's a pretty versatile card there, and also let us know your favorite effect coming off of it. So for the meat and potatoes of the episode, and I guess it's kind of a weird saying, we have Miss Marvel, Kamala Khan, one of the interesting sideways cards, or a really interesting and beloved character. How do you think we should tackle this card here, Pat?
Yeah, she's a transformed character, right? So she has 2 sides, and they're both very different. Thankfully, her injured and healthy sides both are the same. So we don't have 4 different card sides to worry about. I think we should look at read the whole of her normal card, understand that, then all of Embiggened, and then talk about how they interact.
Sure, that sounds great. So on her normal size, she's a medium mover, height 2. She has 3/4/3 defense with 5 stamina, and she costs 3 threat. She has Morpho Punch, range 4, 4 dice builder. After this attack is resolved, the character gains 1 power. Wild Push with a size 2 restriction. She has an active superpower called Embiggen. Cost 3, she immediately transforms. We kind of alluded to this before. She also has a 3 costing throw. It's a character or size 2 throw. Yeah, range 3 and short throw. Not bad. And mm-hmm. then she's Inhuman, which allows her to reroll 1 die in its attack or defense roll, and then immunity poison. So her Embiggen side, she goes to size 4, which is quite chunky. She has high 5, range 3, 5 dice. After this attack is resolved, the character gains power equal to damage dealt. She keeps Inhuman. She gains Morpho Genetics. When making attacks, if this character is smaller than the if the target character is smaller than this character, again, she's size 4, this character may reroll 2 of its attack dice. Additionally, at the end of this character's activation, it transforms into Miss Marvel normal. She also has Polymorph. This character may interact with objective tokens within range 2 instead of the normal range 1. So what do we think of Miss Marvel, Embiggened or normal?
She is a tough character to get your head around. And you know what? This reminds me of every other transform character that we've ever discussed on this show. They're always hard to quantify, right? Because it's hard to know exactly how much time you're going to be spending on each side. How good is each side? I think in general, you have to look at these characters from what we've learned with like Ant-Man, Wasp and Hood. You need to be thinking about them holistically, and you need to expect that you spend some amount of time on both sides, sometimes getting the best of both worlds, but not always, right? Sometimes you might be locked out of doing your preferred thing. I like that on her normal side, she has a very solid builder. Like a range 4 builder that gives you automatic power is always going to be useful. And a wild push on it makes it about the same as Daredevil's Baton Hook, but on a cheaper character and with a reroll. So more likely to get the wild push. And of course, pushing towards is an unusual effect, right? There's not many attacks that push people towards them. So that's all pretty cool. Take out the trash, like you said, is a good throw. But Embiggen and Take Out the Trash are both really expensive on her normal side, right? And she only has that builder for doing a single point of power. So I'm wondering if she'll have a difficult time in the early game where she just isn't able to use those expensive superpowers as soon as she'd like.
Yeah, she's been an interesting character. And in my games with her on the table, it's kind of exactly that. Kind of similar to the Mysterio bandwagon we talked about. She's a really interesting time getting power going in the beginning. And then to be honest, in the mid to late game, she doesn't dump power exceedingly well either. If you find her with a glut of power, right, she's going to throw something, she's going to embiggen, in, and she's just got kind of power left over.
Yep. Yeah, she only really can spend 6 power a turn, right, at most. So she's one of those characters that has quite a limited power economy. She has to spend it in big chunks, and she can't spend that much. So that makes power generation with her awkward, and she's going to be someone that has a lot of power left over to spend on things like team tactics cards.
I do want to say that High Five is deceptively good at building power, right? 5 dice, power equal damage done, and the 2 dice reroll is very nice for actually building power. So once she starts transforming, I've had pretty good luck with her, you know, getting in the cycle of, okay, I'm going to throw something, I'm going to get large, and et cetera, et cetera. It's just a matter of getting kind of that initial power. Obviously, we'd like to get characters going as round 2, especially because she's an interesting role, right? Round 1, she kind of moves up, attacks something, contest an objective or grab something. Round 2, she powers up again, hopefully gains another power and has enough to embiggen. But yeah, definitely an interesting character. Played very differently on the tabletop than I thought she would. I really like the jitter, the transform jitter, the place within one, combined with the polymorph. You can get to some interesting places and surprise some people there.
Yeah, her reach on the table is really long, right? Because of that place effect, the large base from her and Big inside, her polymorph effect. Like you can, as you said, you can reach out and get a lot of stuff. And her attacks are really long range. So one of the things I've enjoyed, just like you, is that her influence over the table is pretty high. I had some good moments with her where I was able to combine her High Five with Blind Obsession and rolling 7 dice with 3 rerolls, right? 2 from Morphogenetics and 1 from Inhuman was really good. And she had the power because she was coming up, I think, for being dazed. She had the power to Blind Obsession and Transform and Throw. And that was a really strong activation. So her best case scenario is definitely very good for a 3-threat character, right? And her best case output and control is really high.
Yeah, I've really liked her on the table, and you know, a little bit of foreshadowing, I'm going to get to it. A lot of people are looking for, you know, exploring 3s that aren't named Valkyrie after recent news. And I think Ms. Marvel is one they should consider. I really like how mobile she is. Again, once you get her going, I've found that she consistently ends up with power for Take Out the Trash. It's just kind of, for me, a matter of getting that first embiggen off to kind of start the train.
Yeah. And I think there's a case to be made, you know, for Ms. Marvel's normal size without really using embiggen very much. Because a 3-cost character with a range 4 push and a range 3 throw is really good control, right? It's one of the better controlling 3-threat characters. And yes, you can swap to the embiggen side and do more damage and steal objectives, and that's great. But I think there are some teams who would pick her just for her normal side and without really a plan to use embiggen very often.
I'm thinking about that. I mean, I won't. Sure, I guess some teams definitely would, but Embiggen's really cool, and yeah. You should definitely utilize it. But I understand what you're saying. You don't have to rush to get the Embiggen off, I suppose, is what you're saying, depending on your team roster.
Right, because when you have, you know, you can play a team where you have your game plan where damage is secondary. You just want to control, get victory points, and win, right? And her front side is control, right? It's low damage, pushes people, throws people, really good at controlling them without hurting them. Her flip side is damage. And the damage aspect just might not play into your plan as often.
Yeah, okay, I can get around that. I do think that it's worth, like... I really like her ability to go and pick up extracts, right? I love how mobile she is with the big size. Like I said, we have the transform, so we have a 1-inch place to a large base, to a 2-inch reach off of it without taking a move action. Choking for some reason. Sorry, no idea what was going on there. Not marked for death, hopefully. So I do really like that, but I get what you're saying, right? When she gets large, outside of her ability to interact with things, she's really just there to beat people into the ground. And she does that pretty well for a 5-dice attack.
Yes, she does. The rerolls help so much, right?
Oh, yeah, it's obscene. Especially like you said, I think we mentioned Wakanda. Anytime you mentioned Blind Obsession, stacking rerolls just gets really ridiculous. And that's why I know it's at its face, it's just a 5-dice, you know, builder for power equal damage done. But with the rerolls behind it, it gets pretty nasty there. Also, being size 4 means she's immune to a lot of stuff. Not as relevant because it's normally only during her activation, but she can do some cool things. So when you're fitting her into Lispad, are you taking her as that damage dealer? Are you taking her as a flex slot? Do you like her as a control piece?
So I think she is flexible, right? As you'd expect from a character with stretching powers. And I think you can fit her in for a lot of different reasons. I do think her early game is a little bit slow. So you're not putting her in for like spicy turn one plays, right? That's not her role on the team. I think her role on the team is to be a really solid, flexible control piece who later on can switch to damage. And she's kind of just like that 3-cost role player, right? I think she can do enough different stuff at a good enough level that you're always happy to have her. But I don't think that she has a specific plan beyond just displacing models.
Yeah, I think that's very fair. She ends up filling a similar role to Valkyrie for me in a lot of ways. Now, I understand she can't double move and throw every round. But you know how Valkyrie is this kind of soft, obnoxious control piece in the beginning, and then when she's built up with power, she's able to just shunt it out in theoretical damage? I think Miss Marvel can do a really similar role, right? Where she can be a very opportunistic attacker, right? I think in episode 100, we both agreed that, you know, Valkyrie isn't what we'd classify as an assassin, and I wouldn't classify Miss Marvel as that either, but she's definitely an opportunistic piece. That can definitely do a bunch of damage and remove characters when needed, or otherwise kind of play this weird cagey control game between the push and the throw she has.
Yeah, and along those lines, speaking of her as an opportunistic piece, I think it's worth mentioning, because we haven't talked about it yet, her defenses, in my experience, are better than they look. Obviously, the Inhuman reroll helps a lot with defense, and the 4 energy defense is really nice. But also because her attacks are long range, she is displacing people, and she is transforming at the end of her activation if she was big. She can create a lot of distance between herself and the people that she's impacting, right? And she could do things like transform, place forwards from somebody who is outside of range 4, attack them at range 3 now, beat them up, then transform back and still be outside of range 4. So she could do this kind of hit and run play without actually using move actions, where she's doing good attacks and making it so it's very hard to double attack her in return. And then with her reroll on defense, you just hope that she can survive the retaliation when it's less impactful than it would be if she was in someone's face.
Yeah, no, all great points. So I think she's a very, again, flexible, pun intended character. I've really liked her on the tabletop. Pat, it sounds like you've enjoyed playing her as well.
Yeah, I think she's really good. One thing I have found a little bit awkward in terms of playing her, some of the timing. The fact that Take Out the Trash is only in her normal form, but Embiggened lasts until the end of the round. So you can't switch to Embiggened and then still throw. You don't have a timing window to throw when you become small again. And so that kind of stuff has been a little bit awkward. So her activations can be a bit complicated. And guess what? That's true for all transform characters. Like, I've had real headaches trying to use Ant-Man and Wasp as well. But once you get your head around her, she's really flexible and she's pretty powerful.
Yeah, so we definitely encourage you to get her into different rosters. She's been a ton of fun. I mean, honestly, if she could throw when she's in big, that'd be kind of gross, like you said, right?
Yeah.
Transforms, large base forward, throws you, and then... That's a lot of energy.
Yeah, it means if you want to maximize her damage, you need to be activating with 6 power, right? So you can throw, then get big, and still make 2 attacks.
Absolutely, yeah. And I do, you mentioned it, the defensive suite is very nice. 4 energy defense on a 3-threat character, plus the reroll, is just very, very
Yeah. I could see her becoming a popular choice for any team that is running the pay to flips with energy, right? If you're running spider portals, which is becoming quite popular in the meta as a counter to things like spider foes, or if you're running deadly meteors, having a really solid three threat character that could do a lot of stuff and also has four energy defense could be great.
Yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong, she can just embiggen between 2 points on meteors, right? Yeah, actually quite easily, as I think between my head, right?
Oh, because of polymorph, so she could also reach out? Yeah, mm-hmm. A lot of flexibility there for meteors. That's cool.
Yeah, I could definitely get behind that. So there's a couple cards in Ms. Marvel's box as well, Pat. Is there one you want to start with?
Yeah, so let's start with Fan Club. I think this card is really, really cool. Fan Club represents how much she adores Captain Marvel, right? Her namesake. And, of course, Captain Marvel has been recently improved, which I don't think we've talked about in the podcast yet, but there was a whole article about it.
Talked about it or not.
Maybe that would have been a better thing to pair than the other changes, but never mind. Fan Club is an unaffiliated reactive card, and it triggers when an allied Captain Marvel does stuff. It's either if she does her Danvers special, which is her throw, she uses binary form, or she uses her rocket punch attack. After the effect of the attack happens, Miss Marvel can spend 3 power and play the card, and she gets 1 of 3 effects depending on what she's reacting to. So if Captain Marvel used Danvers special, then Miss Marvel can throw a size 3 or less terrain or character within 2 and throw it short. If she used binary form, Miss Marvel can transform into Embiggened. And after she transforms, she pushes enemy characters within range 2 of her away short. And if Captain Marvel used Rocket Punch, then Miss Marvel can advance medium towards the target character. So this is giving you a throw or an advance or a transform with a push. Very flexible, very powerful effects. Once again, very hard to quantify how good this is, right? Because it's hard to know exactly when you'll want these. But it's really cool that it's happening during Captain Marvel's turn and there's no range limitation and Captain Marvel doesn't have to spend any power, right? So as long as Miss Marvel has 3 power, you can play this card. Is it worth it?
I have no idea if it's worth it. if you really like Captain Marvel, and there's a lot of reasons to like Captain Marvel after her changes, I think it's a good card. It's just a niche card, and it just comes down to, like, are you going to take the two of them? We've talked about this with, was it the Twins? I honestly can't remember. If you plan on using Captain Marvel and Miss Marvel a lot together, then I think this is a very fine card to have. I think there's a lot of cool things there. I think one of the things I like about this the most is you're in complete control of the card. There's no random associated with it, like lovable misfits. You get to pick everything. And then, like we talked about, there can be a lot of situations with Kamala Khan. Miss Marvel ends up with a lot of power, and this is a great way to help her kind of dump some of that power off.
Yes. I really like this card. I think it is super cool. I will certainly be trying it when I play both of these characters together. And I think I could probably find a roster that wants to do that, especially because they both have 4 energy defense, right? I think I could make a roster that uses the energy flips and uses both of these characters and plays this card. It seems like a natural home. And I feel like the effect I like most is the out of activation throw. Because it doesn't have to be the character that Captain Marvel has thrown, right? The Danvers special. And out of activation throws are really powerful. Displacing a character that's already activated, setting someone up for damage, potentially daisy chaining the same character, right? Having Captain Marvel throw them towards Kamala and then having Kamala throw them. I think that one's really good, but they're all useful effects and they all could situationally be really powerful. So I feel like with this card, you just have to like be keeping it in mind, right? And playing a heads up game where you're constantly thinking about, can I use this? Can I slightly warp Captain Marvel's activation without giving up anything to make sure I can play this card and get a really big effect?
Yeah, I mean, the free throw is amazing, right? But, I mean, none of them are bad, to your point, right, Pat? I mean, a free medium move just is obviously very good, right? We've talked about it. Whenever tactics cards get us in action, we're normally pretty excited about them. And the push could be very situationally useful. I think we agree that that's probably the worst there.
It might actually, you know what, TT? It might be the best. Because it's pushing, it's an automatic push for all characters within range 2 of Miss Marvel, and she is just placed with a large base. So that is a long way, right? That's over range 3 away from where her starting location was. And it's affecting multiple people. Plus, binary form is the thing Captain Marvel wants to do the most. I think you could have a lot of situations where you're like, cool, Captain Marvel goes into binary form, and Miss Marvel pushes your whole team.
Okay, I don't think it's the best. The free throw, I think, is the best. But we can. I think it could be really good. I do also like it. We talked about it, right? It's one of the few ways to get around her in big inside for defensive reasons, which is relevant for like pushing or trying to control her. I like it. And one of the things I do like about the card, because I think we both love these kind of paired up cards. I think sometimes we're critical of their execution. I love that there's no range restrictions on this card. Right, if you have the two of them and they do stuff, you can do a whole bunch of different things with it, and that to me, I think, is really cool.
Yeah, I agree. That is really cool. One thing I want to note about Miss Marvel becoming big and outside of her activation, because it affects this card if you choose that option we just spoke about, and it, I think, affects her next card as well. It's a bit weird, but becoming embiggened outside of her activation is not necessarily what you want. Situationally, it is, but. If you have, like, because Miss Marvel is spending 3 power to use this, right? She could spend that 3 power to become embiggened during her turn. And if she's sitting on 6 power, that means she could throw, then become embiggened, and then make 2 big attacks, right? If you use this card to become embiggened, in her next activation, you have no option to throw. And you have no option to spend any of her power. Because you have no access to her normal side until your next activation is over and you switch back. So this is one of the few ways to actually keep her large model on the table, which is cool. And you get to see it for a while and enjoy it. But actually, it does turn off quite a big part of her kit. So there is some opportunity cost there of becoming big. It's not all upside.
Yeah, I honestly think it's way more situational. I wouldn't even... It's just if you need her to survive, right? Because like you said, her damage output is severely hampered if you go this route.
Yeah, yeah. Certainly her control, right? The throw, I don't know if I'd class that as a massive damage increase, but the control it has is amazing. Cool. So let's have a look now at the other card. This one is called A Better Tomorrow, and this is her teaming up with Miles Morales, which is also a really cool reference to the comics. It's unaffiliated active card. If Miles Morales is within range 2 of Miss Marvel, and she's in her normal side, both characters can spend 2 power each to play the card. So pretty big range and cost restriction, right, TT?
Yeah,
so that's
bad.
4 power.
Definitely very different from the last card.
Yeah, 4 power in range 2. Then what happens? Miss Marvel transforms into embiggened. When resolving this transformation, place Miss Marvel within range 3 instead of range 1. That is a huge place on a large base. That's over range 4 from where she was in terms of her reach. Then place Miles Morales within range 1 of Miss Marvel embiggened. So he gets to go even further. So this is a huge movement for both of them, right?
Yeah, this is monstrous. Correct me if I'm wrong. This is farther than Gamma Launch, isn't it?
Yeah, maybe. So you're one, placing range 3 plus a large base plus range 1 from that base is where Miles goes. I think you're placing Miles approximately as far as Gamma Launch, which was range 5. With the limitation that it has to be near Ms. Marvel. So yeah, it's a very, very long way. What do you think about the card? It's super long movement for 2 characters.
I love the effect. I kind of hate the qualifiers. And then at least when I've been playing them, the 2 characters tend to live on very different areas of the board. So for me, this would have to be something I was planning on using in the opening or on turn 1, for the next time we revisit a turn 1 plays episode. What about you there, Pat?
So the effect is great. I think the biggest issue with it is the 2 cost per character and the fact that generally movement abilities are very effective when you play them early in the game. And these 2 characters are not going to be able to play this early. Because they don't have the power generation for it, right? They need to get stuck in to be generating their power. As a late game play, it could still be very impactful, though. And it could be very good on Ms. Marvel's activation instead of her normal option to go in Biggin'd, right? This makes her in Biggin'd for one power less. So at that point, the card is acting as a discount for her rather than the cost. So if you look at it that way and you're like, okay, if Mars is within two, my in Biggin'd costs one less. If he has some power, then this card maybe is a lot easier to use. And then the payoff is still very, very big. So perhaps there's something there. And it strikes me that this could be really good if the two of them are pairing up on something like Infinity Formula, where they're getting more power. They're naturally fighting close together because they're also fighting over the Infinity Formula. And then at some point in the game, they can make a big play to switch onto the opposing Infinity Formula or a big play to move onto the other side of the table. If they need to get away with extracts, because they can be holding extracts with these, right? Or if they need to just switch and only win one half of the board. What do you think about that?
I'm glad you mentioned the extract piece, because that's honestly the piece I like the most about it. It's the same reason I love Rainbow Bridge, right? You can do some funny shenanigans with moving around with extracts. And we know that Miles is one of the best characters about going and getting an extract, right? So I do like the idea that you can be aggressive with Miles. He goes out, Venom blasts something, right? And then if you're able to position it, he can slingshot himself backwards with the aforementioned item he just picked up. Do I 100% recognize that this scenario will likely very rarely come up in the tabletop? Yes. But if it does happen, it could be really cool. So I do like its flexibility there, but still, like, I've only taken this a couple games, but for me, they didn't occupy the same space in the field enough, and range two is really short.
Yes, especially for characters that want to be battling more at range three or four. I do think Captain Marvel's, I keep saying Captain Marvel, no, that's a card, sorry, Miss Marvel's transform helps and hinders her staying within range 2 of Miles, right? You definitely have the tools to stay near him if you want. It's just that might not be where you want to be on the table. So this is one of those cards where not only do you have to have both characters, but you need to have a plan where they're both fighting in the same area. Kind of like sibling rivalry, right, with Thor and Loki. It's not just enough to be taking them. You have to deploy them together. You have to have a plan where they're fighting together. But I think you can make it work, and I think the payoff is there in the right crisis to incentivize it.
Yeah, so the other thing I want to throw out there, Pat, just to get your opinion on it, Miles tends to really like his power when he is able to get it. How do you feel about him spending 2 points of power?
So, yeah, like I said, it's not an early game thing, right? He's not doing it round one. But maybe after his initial web swing, if that web swing gives him power, maybe he's pretty happy at that point to spend the excess. Because his first two powerful web swing is critical, right? But Venom Blast is not something you have to be using constantly. And beyond that, he doesn't really have a plan for his power. So I can believe that he would find the option. I just believe that it's probably going to be like round three or later in the game.
All right. So if you had to take one card, Pat, Fan Club or A Better Tomorrow, which one are you leaning towards?
Well, it's tricky, right? Because they go in different teams. I mentioned already that Captain Marvel and Miss Marvel combined are really pointing you towards like an energy pay-to-flip team, maybe in Avengers where Captain Marvel is affiliated, or in A-Force, right? With Miles's card, that you naturally think Web Warriors. And Miss Marvel seems like she'd be an excellent Web Warrior because she has the Inhumans reroll and she has the Morphogenetics rerolls plus the Web Warriors reroll. Like, her defenses are really good when she's rerolling two dice for everything. And her attacks are great when she's rerolling those skulls. So I think she could be at home in lots of different affiliations. And it's actually more about the affiliation that you're picking, right? I could see playing her in Web Warriors and taking this card. And actually, I really like the idea of her in Web Warriors. So I'm probably taking A Better Tomorrow.
Okay, fair enough. I'm taking A Better Tomorrow just because I prefer Miles over Captain Marvel. But yeah, I mean, we definitely have a bunch of different options there.
I mean, I do think that she fits into the Web Warriors game plan so well, right? The fact that she's benefiting from Miles' leadership, the fact she has that card, and the fact that she is a control piece, a cheap, tough control piece with some mobility tricks, some extract grabbing tricks. She seems like a fantastic three-threat character to be considered in Web Warriors.
Yeah, I do like her in Web Warriors, to be clear. And Web Warriors has an interesting spot now because Valkyrie's obviously not there, and some different things open up.
Right. She could definitely assert Valkyrie in that a kind of unaffiliated control three spot for Web Warriors, where they want to play lower threat.
And you think you'd take her enough? I guess I could see it, because you're always going to take Miles, so then it really just comes down to, if she is that unaffiliated three, you're going to take her fairly often. It's probably easy to slide in a better tomorrow into your roster to make into your teams.
Yeah, and you don't take, I don't think you take a better tomorrow in every game, right? But you have it for specific crises in mind, where you're like, okay, this movement is really amazing in some situations late game where they're also together. And that's probably things like Infinity Formula and maybe like Gamma Wave. Right, we're like, cool, I play a cagey Gamma Wave game, I don't go past the middle point. Then at some point in turn three, I play this card and both these characters are on the back extract, right? Throwing people off, and I'm loving life.
All right, so that wraps up the Ms. Marvel box, I think, then. Pat, is there anything else you want to mention about her box as we cover it, or what do we think about her?
I think she's really cool. I think this is one of those boxes, in terms of reviews, right, in terms of purchases, you need to make sure you like Ms. Marvel to get this box, right? Obviously, this is a rare box where she has no cards. She has no cards that are unaffiliated, right? And she has no crisis, and she is only one character. So you're buying this because you like Ms. Marvel, but you know what? I'm buying this box. I like Ms. Marvel. And I think she can find a home in a lot of places. I think she is in the running for one of the better unaffiliated threes in the game, especially with the rebalance changes on the horizon. And I think you can make an argument for her in a lot of different affiliations because she's tough enough, flexible enough, has enough control and enough damage that she can find a lot of homes.
Yeah, I'm not going to disagree with any of those points. And I do encourage people to actually get her on the table. She was one of those characters that performed a lot better for me than I read her initially, if that makes sense, Pat. Like, you read her and you're like, eh, she's got a 4-dice attack, a 5-dice attack. She doesn't really have a spender. I don't really understand what she's doing. But the transform characters, not to beat a dead horse here, they're so weird to wrap your head around. Honestly, they've been a ton of fun just getting on the table.
They're always better than they look, right? If nothing else, just because the fact you place for them range one, right? You get these free extra movements. And you have so much flexibility in how you use the character. If you're savvy, you can get a lot out of them.
All right, so we've talked about it a lot. A couple different characters suffered what Pat and I are going to call a rebalancing. Other people may use different words, but these are the words that Pat and I are going to use. And the characters are Valkyrie, Enchantress, and Medusa. So yeah. We're not going to litigate whether they deserved it. We're not going to litigate whether it was too much or too little. We're just going to kind of evaluate the characters as they kind of are after the fact. Right, Pat?
Okay, sounds good. Just in case anyone missed this, because I don't think Atomic Mass actually did a transmissions article about it, but they shared these in a recent live stream, and they'll be going live along with all of the character rebalances sometime early November.
Yeah, and if you did miss it, you can go to AcrossTheBifrost.com. Mark Garreau, the roster doctor, did a first impressions for it. If you go to AcrossTheBifrost.com/first impressions, you can definitely check them out. So Valkyrie is the first one, and the biggest change to Ms. Valkyrie is Asgardian Might. Her throw went from a 2-cost up to a 3-cost. There was one other thing that changed on her, right?
Yeah, the other change was to her Dragon Fang attack. The flurry is harder to trigger. It used to only require a wild, but now requires a crit and a wild to trigger. So you're going to see that less frequently.
Yeah, much less frequently. So what do we think about Valkyrie where she's landed now?
So I think she is still very good. I think, you know what, Tita, you made my life difficult by saying I can't judge how they work because it's hard. Right, it's hard to get leave all your context.
Judge away.
Okay, so look, the reason why Valkyrie was so popular, right, was because she had the best control for a three-threat character because she could always generate 2 power with Asgardian to use her throw. So she could double move and throw as a default option in any turn of the game, including turn one, which was amazing control at good range. She also happens to be one of the best damage-dealing characters in the game, with Charge, Dragon Fang, very good attack, Warrior of Legend, an excellent damage multiplier in particular with Dragon Fang. And so you had this character who had great control and superb damage. And for 3-threat, that's more than you sign up for, right? Putting other things aside, her mobility was fine with charge. Her resilience is fine with 11 stamina, right? Nothing to write home about, but not bad. She kind of was like, had no weaknesses, but some really incredible strengths. And this is dialing down those two incredible strengths. Her damage output is less, the Dragon Fang doing flurry less frequently, and her control is less because she can't, by default, always be throwing every round of the game.
Yeah, but I do think there's still a lot of really good things about the character out there too, right? Most of the press I've seen about her are really negative. I do think that one of the reasons that Valkyrie's been so popular is just because of Asgardian, like you said, right, Pat?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Having a three-cost character that generates two power is so good in so many situations, right? It lets you do turn one plays with tactics cards like Advanced R&D. It lets you interact with multiple extracts and secures, especially when you have secures that you have to pay to interact with. It gives you lots of flexibility and options, and those mount up over the course of the game where you're getting more and more power as the game goes on, and you can always use it at least for big effects late game.
So her role, you think then, Pat, has fundamentally changed?
I don't think her role has changed significantly, with one exception, which is there were some teams that were taking her primarily to use her throw on round one. And now you literally can't do that. So the teams where that was their favorite use for her, she has gone down in value. An example of that, Brotherhood, right? We were big advocates for Valkyrie with Magneto as a way to get his leadership going, right? To start her with a throw, size 2 terrain into size 2 terrain, give everyone power, use that to power up other people's throws and repeat. She can't do that anymore, right? So in that particular example, she's going to be less popular. But she still has some of the best damage output and some of the best control on the 3-threat character. And like I said, she still has no real weaknesses, right? She's still pretty tough and pretty mobile.
Yeah, I do think she's a really interesting comparison out of Ms. Marvel, who we just obviously did an entire podcast about, right? Mm-hmm. I can definitely see them filling very similar roles now. Their throws cost the same. Does Valkyrie have better power? Yeah, I don't know. Their power generation's interesting, right? If you want the turn one stuff, Valkyrie's obviously going to be better, right? But Ms. Marvel getting that flat builder, and then when she starts getting that Embiggen out there, she ends up with a glut of power on her. I do think Valkyrie still has a better high-end damage output, obviously, right? With
definitely.
The flurry trigger plus Warrior of Legend.
Yes.
But I do think it's at least a conversation now, and I think that's honestly why I'm probably happiest with where she's landed, is it'll be more of a conversation about which 3-threat you're going to take, whereas a lot of times it was just kind of like, well, of course I'm going to end up taking Valkyrie.
Yeah, look, Valkyrie is still a fantastic character. I think she, like you said, I think she's still in the conversation for one of the best 3-threats. I think you're going to see her ubiquitously still in any affiliation where she is a member, because she is a superb affiliated 3-threat role player, right? Who can do a lot of things. She's really versatile. She's in really good affiliations, right? A-Force, Defenders, Asgard. You're going to see her all the time in those places. And that's plenty, right? That makes her still more popular than most characters. And I wouldn't be surprised if you still see her unaffiliated for teams that want her specific set of skills.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there. She does have a lot of competition in A-Force now, but I do think we'll still see her. I don't think this is the... My social media is limited. I don't think this is the end or the death of Valkyrie. I just don't think she'll be the most ubiquitous character out there.
Yeah, I agree. She still does her core role as being a flexible damage dealer really, really well, but her control is just turned down a little bit. And yeah, Dragon Fang is not going to proc as often, but you know what? She's got so many ways to pump up her damage between Charge and Warrior of Legend and her throw that I don't feel the loss of that. Her damage output is still top tier for a 3-threat character.
So next up, we have Enchantress. And we might need a moment of silence for Enchantress.
You know what? I don't think we do, because I think the new Enchantress is still plenty good. She had two changes, right? Two significant changes. Amora's Kiss, which is her superpower that lets you take objectives from opposing characters in range one, is now an action. Wow, that is a big change. And Siren's Call, which is her superpower that lets you move opposing characters in range three, is now limited to being used once a turn. So I think we saw this coming, right, with the change to MODOK that was the same, and with Mr. Sinister, a more recently released character with this effect, already had on his card that it can only be used once a turn. Both of these changes are things that I have seen the community suggest from time to time, and various players talk about, and I do think they're for the best.
I think they're for the best, and I was being slightly facetious with the moment of silence, and here's what I think about Enchantress. I believe she will disappear from all rosters for a period of time. Arbitrary period of time, let's say 6 to 9 months. And then people will play her again. Mm-hmm. They'll be like, oh, you know what? She's still good at a bunch of different things, right? Mm-hmm. And then she'll start seeing the table again. But I think people need some time away from her before she ends up getting utilized. Amoris just being in action is a huge change, one that I'm a fan of. It was just kind of honestly brutal to deal with before. And it was weird. We've talked about it on and off pod. Almost this Cold War escalation. We're like, well, I'm going to take Enchantress because they're going to take Enchantress and we'll just steal things off each other all day.
Yes. It was really punishing to ever daze Enchantress when your opponent had priority and they could just activate her first, like move your whole team, steal all your objectives, run away. Right? She had so many actions or pseudo actions during her activation that she could completely change the game state where suddenly she was completely safe from retaliation because she double moved away and moved all your characters in the opposite direction. She had all the points and she could just flip a game to make it feel like winning was completely insurmountable. So I'm so glad that that has gone away. Stealing objectives is really powerful and really obnoxious. I think limiting it with an action is a good thing. And like Siren's Call plus a beam was incredibly abusive, right? Because you could move people all together. You immediately got your power back from having spent it to move them because, of course, you get power for each character you hit with the beam. So you could, like, spend four character, move spend four power, move two characters next to a third, beam them all, get three power back, beam them again, now you've got six power. Do you know what I mean? You could just do so much for so little cost with a character with such good power generation. I think it's definitely a positive change that Enchantress can't just control an entire enemy squad at the start or the end of a round.
Yeah, and her damage output was very respectable too. If she got a couple spikes, it's not. She just makes so many attacks, like you said, right? It's just,
yeah. Yeah, five dice attacks aren't great, but when you're making like six in a round, yeah, some of them are going to spike high.
Yeah, exactly. Seems really good.
Yeah, obviously, a thing we'll see with Enchantress now, she still has her great power generation, but she can't spend power as often, right? She can only do one Siren's Call, and she's going to be using it more as Kiss less frequently. So she has other ways to spend power that didn't come up as much, and now they're going to be a more frequent part of her kit, right? Her Terrain Throw and her Enthrall Spender, neither of them are bad, but often she would have just rather used Siren's Call, and I think you'll see a more diverse set of choices from Enchantress now. And that will help, like you said, TT, that will help remind people, hey, this character's not bad. She has a lot going on.
Yeah, like, I think Enthrall is actually a really good spender in the grand scheme of things. It's got an interesting escalation and triggers if you can get them, but honestly, just a 7-dice mystic attack is really solid in my mind.
Yeah, it's not bad at all, right? And her damage output can be really good with, like, a beam plus an Enthrall plus a Terrain Throw. Her damage output is quite respectable, and it's not something people focused on before, but I think it's something that we'll be using her for more frequently in the future.
Yeah, so if you like Medusa, or excuse me, if you like Enchantress, if she's one of your favorite characters, we definitely think she's still playable. But just take some recalibration. I guess my biggest words of encouragement is it doesn't really do anyone any good to dwell on what they used to be. I think just kind of accepting what they are, and that's kind of what I was trying to impart in the opening part of that segment. And I know that you're always really good at that, Pat. It's just, I see a lot of gnashing of teeth from some people, and I just don't really know where they think it's going to get them. So next up is Medusa. And Medusa had some really, really interesting timing before, and now her timing is kind of locked in, right? The biggest changes is, there's a bunch of changes. Okay, push used to be, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Pat, on damage, it is now a wild trigger. Flurry.
Yes, this is on her Braid Bash, right?
Correct, yes, I'm sorry. Flurry got an additional qualifier in order to happen. It used to just be a wild, and now it's crit wild.
Yeah, which, like we said, the Dragon Fang is much less likely.
And in addition, they did some timing changes, right? You used to be able to stack the flurry and the pushes kind of however you wanted. So you get attack, attack, push, push. But now, however, the push has to be resolved first, right?
Yes, because it used to be that both of them were after the attack is resolved, but now the push is before damage is dealt. Which is not strictly worse, right? Because it means you can push characters that you would have dazed. But what it stops, which I'm really happy about, is the silly interaction where you could do your flurry first and then double push someone and send them hurtling into the stratosphere, right? Push them from your range 3 away to be like 8 inches away from that and just have them a million miles away from Medusa.
Yeah, that was very obnoxious. I personally don't think Medusa was as oppressive as Enchantress was, but in the right hands, when Medusa's dice went well, actually it happened in one of the games we were playing, right? Medusa can just go bananas. And that's still all possible, to be clear. It is just less likely because they've put some additional triggers on there that are a little harder to hit.
Yeah, and I really like that because I think Medusa as a character is awesome. I think her design in MCP is really cool and really fun. I think the problem was just that it all ended up to her being a bit too powerful, right? The control plus the damage was too much. And I like that just making it so these things happen less frequently is going to mean that she still does her same game plan. You just can't expect to be doing like 3 to 4 pushes and attacks during her activation. You know, now you're happy to do 2 to 3. And that obviously is a big toning down of her. But she has so much power in her range 3 attacks, her range 3 throw, her Royal Decree ability. Medusa's a fantastic 4 threat character, and I don't think this changes that significantly.
Yeah, I think Medusa is the one that will still see the most play compared to where their old numbers was, if that makes sense, proportionally speaking. Like, I think Valkyrie will be in more lists, but proportionally she'll take a bigger hit. And I like Medusa. To me, the biggest thing is she's just less consistent, like you said, right? Before, you could almost, not guarantee, but you had a high likelihood of all these things happening, and now, you know, you're happier if you get any of these things. But, like, Royal Decree is still there, and it's still really, really good. She's got a lot of other ways to impact the game.
Yeah, and you might even see her actually using split ends now, right? Her spender. Because if you really want to control a bunch of people, it's going to be much more reliable to use the area effect than it is to hope for the flurry triggers. So you might actually see her use that effect now, which would be cool.
I don't think I've ever seen that used.
Right? Because it's always better to do double Brave Bash in the current situation because those attacks are just more powerful. But I don't think that will be the case anymore. One thing that I think is worth mentioning with Medusa is she is now more luck dependent in terms of getting her effects off. Like you said, TT, they're less reliable. I think she'll find good homes with teams that have ways to mitigate that dice variance, right? I think she'll be a strong consideration for teams like X-Force or maybe even the new Guardians of the Galaxy, right? Who part of their shtick is making triggers more likely to happen, right? And making attackers better because her attack triggers are still incredible and the payoff for her getting them is really high. So I think she'd be a strong inclusion for those kind of squads.
Yeah, I mean, she's always had a good home in Wakanda. I don't see that changing personally. And worth noting, she still has Inhuman. She still has one reroll, so we're just looking for any others to kind of get those triggers out there as much as we can. So I think of the three, I think Medusa will still be closest to her previous number. I think they'll all kind of take a hit. I think all the changes, though, are really warranted. I'm not upset about any of them. What about you, Pat?
Yeah, absolutely not. And I wanted to reiterate something you already touched on, TT, which because I thought it was such a good point, which is from our experience in other games, I would not be surprised if we see these characters just become almost invisible for a period of time. Because people tend to react harshly, right? They react really harshly when characters are depowered. And they want to try new things. And they don't want to play with a character that they've just had the experience of playing with a more powerful version. They don't want to play with this new version. But over time, they will creep back in because they are still good characters. And people will start to look at them fresh. They'll forget about what they used to do in the past. And they'll look at them on their own merits. And they'll realize, I hope, hey, all of these characters have their merits. They all have reasons to be included. And then they should start to see more table time again.
Yeah, I think that'll be awesome. And like I said, personally, my prediction, which on episode 200 we can replay and see how silly it'll sound, is it'll be about 6 to 9 months. But we'll see what it actually plays out to be. So we hope you enjoyed this episode. Please check out Miss Marvel if that's something that interests you. We think she's a wonderful replacement for Valkyrie. In the after the credit scenes, we aren't 100% what we're doing. We might be going over a crisis. We might just be talking about other characters you should explore to fill your Valkyrie, Medusa, Enchantress roster holes. But patrons, you can stay tuned for that after the credit scene. It's just a small 10 to 20 minute bonus episode each week the patrons get. We do want to thank the patrons for keeping this going. We want to thank Jacob for that wonderful interview. introduction. We want to thank Ghostier for maintaining mcpdb.com. And I do also want to shout out Mark Groh, the roster doctor, GD Nerd, for all the work he's done on AcrossTheBifrost.com. So, Pat, it's always fun talking to you. And we want to thank everyone for listening, whether you're a patron or not. And until next time, everyone, cheers and happy gaming.